Welcome to the Minivate Gang podcast for Saturday, November 14th, 2009. This is Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Graham Thickens.
Happy to be here, guys.
And Phil Wilson.
I'm a bad girl?
I love her name is Candy Kane. Ah. And she's got some fun tunes on that PodSafe Music Network.
Is that with two K's or two C's?
A C and a K. How about that?
Ooh,
wow.
Yeah.
I would like to put in a request for some, you know, rock music sometime. I mean,
right.
I'm loving the blues and all, but
I'm a huge blues fan.
I'm just not that depressed.
It's a recession, Phil. Come on.
Yeah, come on. Get off my back, will you? Jeez.
For a minute there, I thought you were going to say it was cat herding, but I'll talk about that later.
Boom, boom. Thank you. Good night, everybody.
It's an inside joke, but I'll get to it.
All right. Well, let's get cranked up because there's a ton of stuff to talk about. And Graham, you were out at Defrag doing your live blog adventure, and let's hear about what happened out there.
Oh, I'm still basking in the glow of that thing, Steve. You really missed a good one. Oh, man. It was over the top, you know. Third year of this event, and might have been the biggest showing of all three. I think it was about 330, very targeted, high-level folks, you know, real movers and shakers on the internet, and a lot of up-and-coming startups. And we had a pretty good Minnesota contingent there. I think we had at least six or eight of us there, a couple of startups, and of course, Eric Norlin, the guy who runs the event, used to live here at one time, and which is how I first met him when he worked for as a contractor for Net Perceptions. And my old buddy Steve Larson was there again, former VP of Net Perceptions here back in the late 90s, and so it was just a ball. The highlights for me personally was, well, the Clue Train Manifesto guys did the final session, and it was a riot. You know, I met all those guys back in that 97, 98 timeframe, you know, really before they wrote Clue Train. And they were all there except David Weinberger. He couldn't make it. He was at some other event in Canada. But we did this funny ad hoc. I recorded an ad hoc conversation before they went on, like about an hour before. And I was carrying around my LS10, you know, my handheld recorder.
Your phaser?
And I had it on the little tripod thing. And they looked at it and said, "What the hell is that?" And I said, "I'm going to record this conversation." And so we just started doing a free form, free association kind of a thing, kind of like a green room talk. And it was a riot. I mean, Chris Locke is so funny. He had us all going. And then Doc came up and started showing the slides that he'd prepared for this talk, which were really funny. So what I'm going to do, since I have no idea of how to edit an MP3, I'm just going to post the thing running from beginning to end.
That'd be great.
Call it the bootleg green room convo or something like that. I mean, these guys are, I just sit in awe of these guys. These guys are conversationalists like I could never be, you know. But anyway, so that was one highlight. And then, you know, the VC panel was spectacular. I got to meet Fred Wilson from Union Square Ventures in New York. He rarely comes out to events, but Brad Feld, who's a VC out there in Boulder, that's behind this Defrag event. He got Fred to come, and it was a really great VC panel on the second day. And that was really one of the highlights for me, but there were lots of others, tons of great companies and sponsors at the event. And
how is Stowe Boyd? I saw that you did some live blogging about him. I'll post a link to your live blog, by the way.
Yeah, that would be great. Oh, Stowe was good. You know, he talks about a real utopian kind of a future for, you know, social media and where it's all going. He talked about his title was Semiotics and Microsyntax, Deep Structure of the Real-Time Stream. So, you know, he's kind of a 30,000-foot guy, to say the least. And he admits he's a hippie, but hey, you know, you got to have this utopian stuff, you know.
So what the hell is semiotics? and Microcentric.
Damned if I know. I don't think he ever defined it.
Oh, jeez.
But it sure sounded good in the title, didn't it?
It does. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Oh, here we go. So, semiotics is the study of signs and symbols and their use or interpretation.
Oh, okay. I knew that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Language analyst so Graham Thickens.
He was talking about angels and demons or the Vinci Code here.
That's
something.
Right. That's right.
Well, he's kind of out there, but it was good, and he hung through the whole event. It's funny; everybody seemed to stay for the whole doggone thing, you know. And the other thing I got to tell you is, and this is it relates to my recording interviews. I did a great recording with Jeff Dacus, the founder of Razorfish.
Did
a great interview with him after he gave his talk. And, you know, he's from Minneapolis. Did you guys know that?
I did not know that, no.
St. Louis Park. And his co-founder is, too, from Hopkins. And, in fact, Jeff said he's going to be in town soon. I said, oh, please look me up, Jeff. We'll do a podcast with you or something. He's got a new organization called the Dacus Group. He's actually in Austin, Texas now, you know, since he sold off Razorfish, which has since been acquired and reacquired, and,
right?
You know, part of Microsoft. It was acquired. What was that? Avantiv or whatever the heck. Anyway, I did the recording when it was about 4 minutes long, and I look at my LS10 and it says low battery, and I said, "Oh, Jeff, I think you know." I hit stop, and I said, "I think I just got that in." And I go to listen to it afterwards. It's not there.
Oh, no.
So that was a bummer. It was a great, great interview.
So you didn't push the red button that says record? Is that the...
Oh, no, I did. It was telling me low battery, and it didn't catch. It wasn't able to capture the whole recording. So I tried to find him again and redo it. But we'll get him here to Minneapolis sometime. As a little closing, I'd say I'm hoping to get Eric Norland here too. I was threatening him to come to Minibar. We'll see. He said he was going to see if he could make it. And then I thought, oh crap, I'll never be able to get him a ticket because it's sold out, right?
You can get him in. Yeah.
I'm sure. I really want to. I've been trying to get some of these Boulder guys to come to town, and they can't ever seem to get enough notice to book it in. But anyway, we may have Eric here soon. And, you know, I was obviously putting trying to get Minneapolis on the agenda for a lot of other folks, too. Chris Shipley, former demo producer, was there and moderated a panel. But anyway, I tried to cover it all on my live blog whenever I could get into the big room and I wasn't out schmoozing in the hallways. So most everything is there, and the link to my Flickr set, too. So
yep.
It was a remarkable experience over about 2.5 days.
You know, you go to a lot of these events, especially on a national level, and cover a lot of stuff. But how would you rate all of these different events? I mean, there are so many different things going on, and I get asked a lot, which ones should I go to? And it's one of those it depends answers, but.
Right.
I mean, if you were to look at, if you were a startup or you were an entrepreneur and you wanted to A, learn, B, get exposed to some real thought leadership, and maybe be able to, you know, connect with VCs and schmooze with people and so forth, how would you rate this compared to demo as an example?
It right up there at the top. I mean, these are really the only ones I go to anymore.
It's
the two demos, Defrag, and then its sister event, Glue, in the spring in Denver. You know, I mean, you go to the ones you can afford. You know, and you know, I'm paying my own travel expenses to these things, even though I'm getting press passes. It still comes down to what can you afford.
But
that's all the more reason why you better make sure you're going to the right one. But for what you just said, Steve, you know, for startups, VC, and thought leaders, and, you know, catching new trends, I don't know of any better events than those. Now, Web 2.0 Summit obviously is a great event that occurred, a couple weeks ago now in San Francisco. I would have loved to have gone to that event, but it's just one that I couldn't afford to slip in either, you know, expense wise or time wise. You know, I'd go to Dreamforce next week, the Salesforce huge trade show. If I could, I have a press pass to that, but I can't, so yeah. I won't.
Yeah.
I'd much rather go to the smaller intimate events and, you know, in the 300 to 700 range of people rather than go to trade show type things.
Well, and that's the thing too with Web 2.0 Summit. It's now up into the low threes for admission. And even when they were desperate for people, they were knocking $1,000 off, but you're still talking, you know, a $2,200 or $2,400 entry fee plus your travel expenses, which could easily add another $800 to $1,000 onto that.
Yeah. And, it's an elite event for the Bay Area, you know, Digerati. I mean, it's got Battelle's brand all over it, you know.
Yep.
And, you know, it's all well and good for these millionaires to hang out and talk about the future. But you know, for most startups, it's just not in the realm of possibility. Yeah. Whereas Defrag certainly is. I mean, I was getting guys, you know, discounts to that thing. The two startups that went, by the way, are Leif Larson's Business Card 2 and a new one that's kind of a concept stage thing called Zing String, which you guys haven't even heard about and nobody really has. But I got both of those guys there too. One who's based in Minneapolis and one in Puerto Rico. If you can believe that. Hey, Julio, are you out there?
Yeah.
I'll tell you about the Puerto Rican co-founder here. He's not a Latino, you know, a native speaker, but he moved there recently. He's a surfer. I kid you not.
Yep. That's great.
But anyway, so, but you know, it's not that expensive to go to Denver, and it's a quick 2-hour flight, and you know.
Yeah.
It's a good event venue.
Well, speaking of events, and speaking of startups, we have Minibar coming up on Saturday, the 21st. Over at Best Buy's headquarters. That's looking pretty positive.
Yeah, have you guys had a chance to take a look at some of the sessions that have been pitched?
Yeah, I did. I'll put this in the show notes too, but I mean, there are some that look really fabulous. Justin Grammon's thing on Android, Intro to Drupal. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting sessions on here.
Yeah. So, it, you know, it'll be interesting in an industry event. I understand it's sold out, too. So,
yeah.
How many will be there, do you think? Is it going to be in the neighborhood of like 350-ish or something like that? Or did they say?
They didn't say, but remember the one that was at Kaufman Union? That was
600.
It was.
No, I think it was about 425, something like that. But this Best Buy one would be limited by the size of the facility. I mean, you can only fit so many chairs and tables in that room.
Well, here's what it says.
Is
600 on the Minibar homepage. Yep.
For what?
For Minibar.
The last one or for this one?
For this one.
For this one.
It's right here.
Oh my God. They've got 600 signed up.
There will be 125 parking spots in the visitor's
so
lot.
So everybody carpool.
We recommend carpooling.
Are you kidding me? Yeah. They got 600. Well, you know, I wonder what they're going to use for the big master main room then. I mean, they've got multiple breakout rooms there at Best Buy, I suppose. Oh, you know what?
Maybe they'll probably do the cafeteria.
I don't think that does their theater hold that much? Maybe their cafeteria would.
Yeah.
I don't know. That'll be interesting.
Well, let's see. Let's figure out, though. It's a free event. 600 tickets have been taken, so you're going to see an attrition. So you're probably going to see around 450. So.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe so. Thanks for signing me up, by the way, Phil. I never catch these deadlines. And it's like now social media breakfast. I mean, now, you know, it's like I just showed up to the last one. I never had time to register for it. And now I see they're saying, okay, no one will be admitted without photo ID.
Well, that's a security thing from Best Buy.
So somebody sent me an email that I'm busted. You know, I can't just show up at these things anymore. This has gone big time. Photo ID, I'm a passport. You know, are they going to fingerprint us or what?
No, anyway. this is all about Best Buy and their security model. So they've got to make sure that the right people are coming and so forth.
Well, no, I'm talking about social media breakfast now. Oh, I don't know if they're going to make a show photo ID at Best Buy, but I know you have to go through the search thing at the door, and you know, so you aren't carrying in any weapons or anything. But
yeah, there's always plenty of bacon, so I don't know what the problem is.
Yeah, gotta have it.
Well, another great event coming up is the WordPress Users Group. And Tim, are you leading a session this time?
I don't know. I pitched a session last time and we didn't do it. So it's on the docket. We haven't decided on what the sessions will be yet.
What's the date on the WordPress Users Group?
What is it? The 3rd or the 4th of, I think it's the 3rd of December.
Cool.
Yeah. I'll have to look that up, but I believe it's the 3rd. It's either the 3rd or the 4th. It's at Sierra Bravo again.
At the Nerdery.
I think it's a great space. So I think it's good to get together. Hopefully we'll see that WordPress site for the users group here soon.
Right. Yeah.
That's yeah. That would be that nice.
They have the Google group, but it's good to see that there is a community of WordPress developers around town that could sustain a group like this.
Is this an evening event, I assume? Because the 3rd or the 4th is a weekday, Thursday or Friday. Yeah, okay.
Well,
it's probably Thursday. They wouldn't do it on a Friday night, would they? I don't know.
No.
I think it's Thursday.
Probably not. I'll look it up here while we're...
And we also have a Mobile Twin Cities meeting on Tuesday night. And it is Demolicious this week, so we'll see some demos for some folks. So Justin Grammons has put that group together, and it does very well. And when I go, I'm constantly amazed at the level of which these guys are speaking as far as development. And of course, I do get lost in the geek speak from time to time, but a lot of Android, iPhone. Try to get them to spend a little more time thinking and spending some time with the folks at BlackBerry, because they still have a significant market share. But
well, yeah. I'll tell you, I just have to jump back on one thing about WordPress.
Yes,
there's some guys in Australia that have a company called InkSub, and they've done. EduBlogs has an example, a big WordPress MU install. They've got like 350,000 educators that have free blogs there. They have this WordPress developer premium model. I mean, you can go in and you can set up your own WordPress MU network by buying. Well, they just started a WP Plugins WordPress App Store. And I'll put this in the show notes too. And
we're going to start buying plugins
well,
now?
And the most very recently released plugin is Business Card 2.
Ah!
It's $5.
Really?
Yeah, you can buy a plugin. But I'm really interested in this, and I'm interested in this from the standpoint of, you know, I love open source, and I love the capability for all of these various aspects to be available for free and so forth. But oftentimes it's somebody that is doing it as a labor of love and they've got a real job. And so they're not necessarily putting all the wood behind the bat that they need to. And, you know, in the case of e-commerce, I know Tim, you've been doing a lot in Magento commerce, but, and there are, there's a lot of momentum behind specific sorts of plugins for e-commerce, but not to the point where you've got service and support. And I mean, I know I would pay, actual money for an engine that was, you know, had some support if it was a mission critical e-commerce play.
Yeah, I think that's where we're headed with WordPress, is that the, you know, kind of the premium theme world sort of is opening up, and now you're seeing premium plugins, and I think you're going to see also managed WordPress services and things like that. So it'll be built on top of the WordPress ecosystem, which is open source and free, but to really get something that's stable to run a website, you're going to have to pay some money for some of the components.
Yeah. Well, you're doing that now with themes. I mean, some of the best themes and theme frameworks, they're not free.
Well, the reason we do that, though, is that the developers actually stay in step. One of the problems with themes in particular is that as WordPress evolves and there's frequent releases of the software, you know, a lot of theme developers they do it once and that's it. And oftentimes it doesn't work in the new version.
Right.
So, and the same goes with plugins. So I think that's what you're going to be paying for, is someone that's actually going to be doing the testing and continuing development of these things, as WordPress evolves. And it's getting more and more complicated every day.
What, WordPress itself?
Absolutely. Yeah. There's, and I think, let's see, on the current release, which is 2.8, I think we've had 6 service releases for security patches.
Right.
Which this tells me that we're almost heading into a Microsoft era of WordPress here.
is that scary?
Yeah.
Well, it's almost like it's Patch Tuesday with WordPress every week. We just had 2.8.6 come out a few days ago. So.
Well, but you know what? I mean, I will say that it wasn't until 2.7 shipped that I actually felt like WordPress finally got to a point where it was really bulletproof. And it'll be interesting. Here's where I think it's going to be really an amazing point in time is when Drupal 7 ships. I've been sort of following what's been going on with the user interface stuff and what they're doing with the core of Drupal. And then at the same time, WordPress, when they hit 3.0, Matt Mullenweg said that they were going to roll BuddyPress and MU into one platform. So that's going to be fascinating to see what happens there, because Drupal is really looking at the success of WordPress, and things that I've been reading as I've been following this stuff is everybody that's involved with Drupal core is kind of saying, well, how come that's not us? You know, why aren't we at the level of a WordPress? Cause we're, you know, faster and more stable supposedly. And it's just that it's just so incredibly complicated to build that you really need to be a hardcore developer to be able to make that thing sing. And I'm building out 2 sites right now in WordPress for somebody. And it's amazing how fast it is in comparison.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's why I stay away from both Drupal and Joomla. Both of them are very powerful, and it looks like you can actually build the site fairly quickly. But in both of the projects that I've done with those systems, it always takes about 3 times longer than you expect to do the project. Where with WordPress, you can estimate it a lot better. It's a lot, things come together a lot faster, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why our buddy Randy Guy says, you know, if you're a Drupal dude, you're going to be on Hacker News all day long, right, Steve?
Yeah. Randy is just, he and I go back and forth every single time I do anything pro open source. He's all over me like a bad suit about Expression Engine. And, you know, he's always pointing out all the security flaws and stuff. And it's a fun thing to do back and forth. But,
yeah,
you know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah. People have their favorite flavor, and, you know, proprietary versus open source is still out there, you know.
Yep.
We hear that with that, you know, with the whole Apple thing all the time, you know. I heard developers talking at Defrag, you know, they use iPhones, but they still really object to this closed, you know, sort of system.
No question.
They just long for the openness, you know. But I've said, hey, it's the experience, guys. And then they say, well, yeah, I have one. And they hold up their iPhone. So, you know.
Well, but you know, it's so. Can I just shift a little bit? Because one of the things that is really clear to me is that we're in this point of accelerating change, is that it's not just a matter of things are happening incrementally and people are doing interesting things. It's this accelerating change. And so here's what I'm seeing. You know, Google, of course, buys Grand Central, has Google Voice. Now they go out and they buy Gizmo 5 as a potential competitor to Skype. And obviously they're not going to do anything for quite a while until they can make it highly scalable and, you know, get all the bugs worked out. But
it works now, though.
Oh, of course it does.
I mean, you can, someone posted the directions on Lifehacker or something like that.
Well, yeah. I have personally had issues with Gizmo 5 trying to get the SIP number, the session initiation protocol number that is assigned to a Gizmo 5 that you can use, and it doesn't work. I mean, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. People complain about it. So, I mean, there's some little gotchas in there. If it's just a Gizmo to Gizmo call, you're fine. But if you try to interact with the public telephone network, there's some issues. But the point is that all the disruption going on. Then you've got Google Android on mobile smartphones, but at the same time, you've got the Google OS and Android on other devices. And you've got all the stuff happening with WordPress and Drupal. it's just, it's like the whole landscape is shifting. You know, Google buys AdMob. It's just, there's this real accelerating change going on. Are you guys seeing that? Are you Phil?
Phil?
Phil.
Sorry about that. I was muted. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, I can see that. I mean, I think it's consistent with the history that we've seen in the space. So yeah, I can see that.
I think it's a real land grab, Steve. I mean, look at all the consolidation going on across the whole industry. I mean, you know, HP recently bought 3Com because they're trying to compete with Cisco, yep. And they're trying to compete with everybody else. And Oracle's now in the computing business because they have Sun, or they hope to. And, you know, there's a lot of land grabbing going on. And as we're coming back into a strong uptick, I think, in the tech spending, I think all these vendors, you know, and Google, I'd lump Google in there too. You know, they want to be ready. They want to own it all. You know, there's all this one stop stuff going on. You know, they all want to be one stop providers. So yeah, it's causes change in some cases. It causes change where the acquired company kind of just fizzles away, you know. But getting back to Google, I guess this thing with Grand Central, which is now Google Voice, is still going strong, and now with Gizmo. By the way, you should talk to Gary Doan about that, Steve, if you want to get more up to speed on that, because he's kind of an expert in this whole VoIP thing. I was going to say, I'm still trying to get a Google Voice number. Have you guys ever tried to get one in your area code?
I have one, and I've got two invites. I'm keeping one for sure. So if you want an invite, I can give you an invite.
No, Gary gave me an invite, and I'll be damned if I can get a number. It's like, you know.
Oh,
it's like
I see.
It gives you a way that where you can select your area code, and then, you know, and then you can either type in words or numbers or whatever, you know.
Oh, like you mean you're looking for a specific type of
Like the only way you could do it was type in what you want. It doesn't really, for me, it isn't really spitting up, you know, like spitting back, like, okay, choose from this list of numbers, you know, like you used to do when you went with a wireless carrier. You go into the T-Mobile store or whatever and then say, okay, you can choose from any of these numbers in your, you know, in your particular area code or your prefix or whatever. And sometimes you could choose a really cool one, you know, and a lot of people would choose, you know, like, you know, 944-2000 or something for their cell phones, you know. Which is great. And Google Voice, it's like, I can't figure out how in the heck you're supposed to get a number. It's like I think it's all kind of sold out in the 952 area. It's really hard to find a prefix that will give me a number. Huh. Anyway, I spent about a half an hour fooling around. I thought, screw this, you know.
Well, I think what they did is they when they did Google Voice, they bought a chunk of 1 million numbers.
Yep.
And then they, you know, those are across who knows how many. I don't know if that was just North America or U.S. or what, you know, Mike Arrington at TechCrunch got the number portability, so he was able to port a number to Google Voice. And,
really?
Yeah, and I've been following the threaded discussion on this because that, to me, is the tipping point. That's the magic point where right. I will absolutely do everything in Google Voice. Although I'm really intrigued by Talk to Me, TOKTUMI, you know, for a small business, you can set it up so that you can, you know, hi, welcome to Minovate. If you'd like to talk to Steve Borsch, please press 1. If you'd like to talk to Tim Elliott, please press 2. And it'll route to whatever phone those individuals choose, up to 9 people. And it's $15 a month. Mm. And so that's, I'm sure that there's going to be an arms race between Google Voice / Gizmo and Skype offering business telephony services. And so I think we're going to see a lot of innovation in that space, because then you've got Asterisk, the Linux-based PBX, and all of that. I, you know, maybe we should get Gary Doan on here to just talk about VoIP.
I'll tell you, he's been studying this space for a long time, and he knows all the players, and he sees what's coming. He'd be a good guest. He really would.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh. So, yeah, he and I go way back, and he had a startup going locally here. I don't know where he's at with that or where he's going next, but he's definitely the man in this town that I know that, yeah. that you know, that covers that whole thing. So,
well, so here's something that I just have to throw out. I don't know if you saw this on Tech Meme. I think it landed yesterday. It was an interview between this guy, Mike McDonald at WebPro News, and Matt Cutts, the software engineer from Google, who is discussed a lot. And I think he's even been on that What Would Google Do, the twit.tv podcast. And
it's called This Week in Google, by the way.
This Week in Google. Yeah.
Yeah. That's What Would Google Do is Jeff Jarvis's book.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is very good, by the way. It's one of the few recent business books that I've actually read. So
really? Mm-hmm. Well, the article was about Google saying page speed may become a ranking factor in 2010. Mm. An algorithm change would make slow sites rank lower. So what do you think the effect is going to be on home pages, all over?
Well, didn't I read that Google was also playing around with a different something to replace a different protocol to replace the HTTP? It would be what was it, SPDY or Speedy?
Yeah. Yes, yeah, that was just announced as well.
Yeah, well, Google's taking over the world, so.
Well, I think that that's not good news for Adobe. I think that Flash sites will definitely be penalized.
Yes. Yeah.
And I think that it's going to speed the adoption of HTML5.
I agree. That's exactly where I was going to go, Tim. Yep.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And I hate to say it, but Steve Jobs was probably right to keep the iPhone platform Flash free because it will be, you know, the new web will be very browsable on an iPhone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's no question. Well, so here's the other thing that I thought was interesting. I'm helping this. I've got a client that I'm building out a couple of sites for, and we wanted to do a tour. And there's a million ways to slice this. I mean, I've done tours as videos. I've done tours as clickable slideshows and yada, yada, yada. And I use Adobe InDesign a lot, and it has a facility in there where you can actually create an interactive slideshow, if you will, with some nice transitions and so on, and output it as a SWIFT file. And now you've got this interactive tour. Do you know that, I mean, Apple pulled export to Flash out of Keynote, so you can't do that anymore. You can't do an interactive QuickTime video and maintain the interactivity if you output it to a video and then you transcode it to Flash with all the interactivity's gone. And so I looked at a bunch of different ways to deliver this for him, and it is really a challenge to output in interactive Flash. And I keep asking myself the question, why hasn't Adobe made this brain dead simple and incredibly cheap? You would think that it would be if they provided low end tools to be able to create, interactive this and that Flash adoption would explode. But they're not playing. I mean, certainly don't see any plugins for WordPress, for instance. It's like they're not playing anywhere.
Mm.
So I think Flash has got a very limited upside, personally.
Yeah, and like the Flash zealots say, hey, it's on 99.8% of all computers or something outrageous like that. But, where is it going, I guess? It you wonder, because Apple is definitely not on that bandwagon for sure.
Well, and Google's not, and neither is Microsoft.
Not only are they not on that bandwagon, they've got their, their tanks and guys with machine guns coming after them.
That's right.
Oh my God.
So what does this mean for, what about Silverlight for all you Microsoft folks out there? Where's that whole thing going?
Well, it's the same direction. It's just exactly the same thing happening. So, I'll just give you an example. You know what Lightbox and Shadowbox is? So when you put, there's a plugin for WordPress for Shadowbox as an example, and mm-hmm. it's where you click on something, a video or an image, on, and then everything goes gray around it, and the thing sort of pops up and plays.
Yeah.
Okay. It's mm-hmm. a JavaScript design, and so here's the punchline. The punchline is that everybody that I read talks about, because I've instituted it on this site, and I may have to pull it out because I've tested it on IE 6, 7, and 8, various flavors of Firefox, some WebKit browsers, you know, Chromium and Safari, Chrome and Safari. And the bottom line is on Windows under 6, 7, and 8, it just doesn't look right. It just doesn't come up right. And there's all of these factors involved, and I'm not going to get into it on the podcast. But at the end of the day, it's really, really a challenge for developers. And Tim, you know this from the WordPress theme standpoint, all the IE 6 and 7 fixes that have to go in, especially with 6 because it doesn't read ping images. And it's just really hard to try to create something that has to encompass all this stuff that are not web standards.
Yep. Yep. It drives web designers crazy.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and that brings up, we were going to talk briefly too about WCCO's The Wire, which was done in Flex. So it's a Flash app.
Mm-hmm.
And even though everything that I've looked at in there, based on the demos that I've seen in HTML5, that, you know, at some point, you know, next year or the year after that, if it looks like HTML5 is the clear victor in interactive web stuff, that everything that they've got in there now could probably be redone in HTML5. So, I mean, it's not like it's a deal killer. But what are you guys thinking about that with respect to being able to follow a story and go through? And for those that don't know, WCCO's The Wire is an application that's time based, and you can not only discover a story, but you can follow all of its aspects in real time, in near real time, as the thing unfolds.
Of course, depending on the amount of involvement from the reporter and or the public. So
it's
not necessarily. I mean, it's very dependent on being able to take the time to watch that story develop and to feed that story. That's one thing that I find interesting about The Wire is it does add a different kind of layer for the reporter, the journalist, to be involved with that story. They really kind of turn that story into open source.
So, Phil, how are they going to curate the user-generated additions to the story?
Well, you know, when I was talking to John Danzer about that, he said that there really was no plan to put any kind of restrictions. It was really going to be purely wide open. And we talked a little bit about curation, and they still hadn't really gotten to the point of, you know, how they were going to go about making sure that there was a level of confidence in whatever the stuff was that was coming out. But they're still working on getting the thing built and out the door. So I think that some of the policies that go with it haven't really been touched on yet.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is they don't have the staff to do the curation. I mean, these broadcasting properties are so thin on staff anymore that, you know, curation takes humans and it takes time, and
which I think is one of the reasons that The Wire could be a valuable tool, because it makes it possible for those true news junkies to be part of the process and to actually help out the reporter. But again, mm-hmm. I agree that there has to be some sort of fact checking involved.
Yeah, the way they do it on their iPhone app that, you know, that Duap developed for them and is done for, what, 70 other stations or something, is somebody is assigned, somebody gets all the inputs that come via the, you know, the citizen journalists, if you will, using their iPhones, and they sit and make a decision. Do we put this on the iPhone app? Do we put it on the website? Or do we even put it on TV, you know? So somebody's sitting there and making those decisions, whether they ignore it or whether they send it to one of three things, you know. three ways that it can be viewed by the public, you know. So that's how they do it. And that's going to be an editor or an assistant editor or an assignment editor or something that's sitting there watching all this stuff come in. And I haven't talked with John to find out how much time that takes or who's actually doing it at CCO. But but I believe they have that feature turned on in their iPhone app, don't they? Apparently the station can choose whether when the you know the ones that are using this mobile local news app, they can choose whether or not the citizen journalism feature is turned on. And DUAP claims that most are turning it on now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have an iPhone.
Well, at the top of every article in the WCCO iPhone app is a share button. And you can share it by email, text, you can send it to Twitter or Facebook. So that's one aspect. But I have not turned on the feature that you're describing. I did not know that that was built in.
Well, the station has to turn it on to allow,
I see.
For stuff to come directly to them that they can curate.
Okay.
You know, by the way, I just read, was it recently where CNN made their, what is it called? iReport or something, their citizen journalism thing, a part of their main site now, like they merged it together or something. I don't spend time on CNN.com. But anyway, I thought I just read that recently.
Well, you know what? I will say that I have just looked at this now, and they do have in certain sections on this app, submit a photo or video.
Yes.
So under editorial, under the good to know, for example, you can do that. You can upload a photo or video with your report.
Yeah, with text. Yeah.
And one of the things that I said to John Danzer that so impresses me about what they're doing with this app and with The Wire is, you know, is it perfect? I don't know. You know, is it going to materially change the direction of the business for them and differentiate themselves dramatically? I don't know. But here's the thing. Nobody does.
That's right.
And they're taking a risk.
Yeah, they are. Yeah.
They're innovating. And that's why, because we've kind of talked amongst ourselves about how impressed we are by the risks that Best Buy takes and what WCCO is doing and what General Mills is doing on the corporate. You know, I mean, there's all of these organizations that are just trying. They're just out there and they're just doing it. And
yeah. That's God more bless important. Them,
absolutely. Know? Absolutely. That's what it's all about.
Yep, they're having fun, and you know, citizen journalism is a hot area. I'm personally involved with two citizen journalism news sites, mobile video sharing kind of site in the one hand, and another one's kind of a new quote unquote new journalism site trying to present both sides of the story. It hasn't even really launched yet, but there are a lot of startups coming into this space, and of course the traditional journalists feel very threatened by this. They're a really nasty mad bunch of people because they're losing jobs like mad, and when you bring up citizen journalism to them, their backs go up, you know. But it's out there, it's happening, and there was a site I discovered just a week or two ago that I'd never heard of called Newsy, N-E-W-S-Y, which is a startup out of Columbia, Missouri. I think it must be the J School at Mizzou. Some, I don't know, people out of, journalism professors or something, I don't know. But
well, Kim Gerritsen.
Teaches there, yeah.
He does.
Advises down there.
Yeah,
I'm sure he knows about it.
I'll find out, yeah.
But it's a pretty cool-looking site called Newsy. I'm not working on that one. I've been helping Mayomo, M-A-Y-O-M-O, which is a European-based venture-backed startup, global mobile video sharing site. But anyway, this is a real interesting space that's only going to get busier. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Huffington Post and you know some of the big names in the field already are doing some pretty amazing things, and I find it fascinating to watch what's going on there. But I got to run, guys. I got to get to that Gopher game.
Yeah. So. Well, you know what? We should wrap up anyway, guys, because we've been at this for 45 minutes, and You go ahead and drop off, and then we'll just kind of wrap up.
I was going to say, who would ever believe that a gopher would be playing with a jackrabbit? But that's what's going on today. The South Dakota State University Jackrabbits coming to TCF Bank Stadium.
Well, bring your sunglasses.
It's
supposed to get nice today.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot better than homecoming when I damn near froze. So we'll talk to you guys later.
All right. Thanks, Graham.
Bye-bye.
All right, Tim and Phil.
Yes.
So, should we change the world? Yeah, it's just us now. Oh my God!
WordPress meeting is on the 3rd, which is a Thursday.
Okay, yes. December 3rd, Thursday.
Of December. You might want to put that in the show notes.
I will. Now that Graham's not gone, let's talk about him. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, what's this deal with this Gophers fan? What, you know, did he go there or what?
Yeah, he's going to the game. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I think did he go to the U of M?
Did he go to the U of M?
Yeah.
I don't know. Did he?
I don't know. I don't know. He's just a rabid sports fan. God, the tickets are just incredibly expensive, though. I mean, people are scalping them like crazy and trying to convince my daughter to get, because apparently the student section is pretty well empty.
Well,
not empty, but it's sparsely populated.
Really?
Well, you know, I remember being in a fraternity there and going across to Memorial Stadium and watching the first couple of quarters, and we come back at halftime. Sometimes we wouldn't go back because we, you know, actually couldn't. So I won't go any further than that, but
keep it to yourselves.
Keep it to myself. Yeah. Those who actually know me, of course, none of my fraternity brothers, I'm sure, are listening to the Men of Eight Gang podcast, but you never know.
So what do you think? What do you think of some of the groups that are breaking out here in the Twin Cities area? You know, we talk about social media breakfast, and we talk about mini bar, and all of these things are selling out, you know, or filling up quite quickly. Are they being filled up with people that are curious? Are they being filled up with people that are serious about the social media space or the tech space, or is it more curiosity seekers?
Man, you know, that's
I think it's a mixture of all of those things.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a mixture too, but when I was at Lawson Software, there were two guys that I would have lunch with fairly often. One was Doug Olson, who's now the GM for Microsoft Design Tools and has the office here in the Twin Cities. And the other guy was a guy named Maher Akeem. And we'd acquired his third company. He's now started a fourth out in the Bay Area. And two of the smartest guys I've ever met, and also world-class knowledgeable, if there is such a thing. You know, significant players who know everybody in techdom.
Where are you going with this, Steve?
Well, here's where I'm going with this, is that we would have lunch and we would sort of lament the fact that there really wasn't anybody else that we could talk about sort of what was happening next. We couldn't, we'd have conversations about OpenID and micro formats and, video formats and, you know, what was happening with user interface design. And, you know, we'd be talking about this stuff that, I mean, today we would be having conversations about HTML5, for instance, and what
that
means.
Which is quite thrilling for me, I got to tell you.
Yeah,
it's because
that's
where
that's no, but it's about the future. I mean, it's easy to turn around and look in the past and sort of forensically dissect things, and it's also interesting to look at what's happening right this minute. And that's how social media breakfast feels. And, you know, there's a little bit of push in the envelope. I mean, the journalism panel was great because it's talking about what is and what's next. But I'm more interested in what's next and what trails haven't been blazed and what technologies aren't fully baked, and where things are headed and what the trends are. That's where I'm at. And there really isn't a venue for that. Minibar, in some respects, could be positioned as that, but it's still more about what's now rather than what's coming. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, no, I think that looking at the minibar sessions, there's several of them that were the same as mini bar last time, and sometimes in different, you know, named different things. Sometimes they're named exactly the same thing. I'm sure they're, you know, things have evolved in the last year. So I'm sure they'll be, you know, new takes on the same kinds of subjects. But it doesn't, you know, there just doesn't appear to be a lot of, you know, what is going to happen next. And it's more, here's what's going on right now.
Yeah.
There is an HTML5 session, which I'm going to definitely go to.
I saw that.
It just seems like this is what's happening now, or what's happened. And, you know, there's going to be some great discussions about this, but there's not a lot of what's happening next. And that's what Social Media Breakfast every month is about.
Right.
Is what's happening next. And it's a more unstructured sort of thing, which is kind of funny since, you know, like a bar camp, it's supposed to be unstructured.
Right.
Mini bar is starting to become a very, very structured event.
Yeah.
Well, that's a bad thing. It's just the problem of scale. I mean, if it starts getting so big, you have to have some sort of structure, and nobody gets anything out of it. But yeah, there needs to be those spaces where you can break off and come up with something else. So, I think at the same time, guys, every time you get together to talk about tech, no matter if it's just to talk about, you know, what's happening right now, it ultimately leads to the future. You got to look at the big scale. You've got to look at, well, if we get this accomplished, what does it mean? So there's always a certain amount of looking forward at any one of these events.
Yep. Well, we didn't get to a couple of topics. One of the ones I wanted to talk about was the importance of design and innovation, because I'm working on a project now that is all about the elements of innovation, but specifically about design.
We can cover that's a timeless topic. We can cover that next week.
Well, let's do that.
That, and we'll also have the exclusive on the Carrie Prejean video. So.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
I'm sorry. I thought I'd throw some sort of teaser in there that was maybe a little bit more sexy than innovation and design.
There you go. All right. Well, listen, you guys have a good, great weekend. It's going to be gorgeous later on today and into Sunday. And we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, Steve. Thanks. Yeah, have a good week.
You too. Take care.
Bye, Tim.
Yep. As I can be. Trouble always follows me. I killed myself a black cat just the night before. Spread a little goofy dust all around my door, hoping I would chase the evil away. But when the dawn appeared, I'm just a bad girl, and I've been bad most every day. I'm a bad girl, just as bad as I can be. We'll be right back. stories. Promise I'd be good. But I admit it, Daddy didn't do the things I should. I'm tired of this lying, can't take it anymore. Ready now to tell the truth and settle up the score. I'm just a bad girl, trouble's always at my door.